going on, everyone? Welcome to One Man's Opinion Podcast. I am your host, Noah Gillian. So happy you decided to join in today. It is the 18th of October, 2021, and we are here to recap another great week in sports. On today's episode, we're going to be going over the Eagles game that took place last week on Thursday night against the Buccaneers and go over what we saw and how it impacts the rest of the season. Before we get started, if you want to follow us on social media, you can find me on Twitter at Noah Gillian, and you can also find the show's account at OneManOpinion17. So without further ado, let's just get right into it. So the Eagles took the loss last Thursday night, 22-28, against the defending Super Bowl champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers. In a game that was pretty ugly from the Birds' perspective, a game in which they got drastically outgained in terms of total yards. We're just getting really pushed around the field a lot. Time of possession was not even close. Tampa Bay almost doubled in terms of time of possession. And it was really a game that exposed some of the Eagles' weaknesses in this game. One being the inexperienced quarterback and play caller of the Philadelphia Eagles and Jalen Hurts and Nick Sirianni. We'll get into Sirianni a little bit, but we'll start off with Jalen Hurts and kind of his performance as we usually do. Didn't look great out of Jalen in the game in totality. Only went 12 for 26, only for 115 yards. Did throw one touchdown that came on the first drive of the game to former Eagle Zach Ertz. And also, Jalen had one interception as well. So definitely not the best performance of Jalen's through the air. He also carried the ball 10 times for a total of 44 yards and two scores. Both of them were within the 5-yard line. The first was on a fourth down play that Jalen ran in, and then the second was more of a designed run read option that he punched in toward the end of the game, and that gave the Eagles 20 points, and then subsequently they scored the two-point conversion to go up to 22 points, but that would be the final score that the Eagles would put up in the game. Definitely an interesting performance, I guess, to say the least, from Hurts, because he kind of gave you the whole package in this game. You know, he gave you what a lot of people, see in Jalen Hurts, that fight, that resiliency, the rushing ability, when he needed to make big throws. But then the other side of the coin, you also saw a lot of missed throws. You also saw a lot of a lot of plays where the timing was off. Some of this may also be on the play caller in Nick Sirianni, like I mentioned, we'll get to in a few minutes. But, a lot of it, you really see the limitations of Hurts this year. It's made itself prevalent over these first 6 weeks, along with last season as well. So, am I ready to answer if he's a franchise quarterback or not? I don't think so. However, I do think we are getting closer to the answer that the Eagles are searching for, especially before a big offseason for the franchise. You got to figure out what you have in Hurts before the end of the year, because as of right now, it looks like the Eagles might potentially have 3 picks in the top 10 overall, which is unbelievable, and 4 picks in the top 40 or 50, something in that range. They'd probably have a pick in the top 10 of the second round as well. So you're going to have a lot of ammo to make a move potentially. There's rumors that Aaron Rodgers isn't happy. There's rumors that Russell Wilson he almost potentially got moved. Obviously, the Deshaun Watson elephant in the room is still there as well. So there's a lot of interesting things that could happen after the season, which is why it makes it even more important. You need to figure out what you have in Hurts before the end of the season. I don't think I'm ready to call it heads or tails yet. However, there are a lot of clues that are starting to show themselves as the week progressed. This was a big matchup too. Let's not get it wrong. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are a legit Super Bowl contender. Their front seven is absolutely dominant. They were missing Levante David. However, they still, put up great resistance in that game. Their quarterbacks played well. And obviously their offense was very, very tough to stop from an Eagles perspective. But I thought Hurts played all right in the game. You know, the first half, after the first touchdown drive, the whole offense was pretty anemic and didn't really produce anything, which was, you know, you give it a pass every now and then, but when you have consecutive drives and you can't put anything together, you do the same thing over and over. It's just really, you know, it doesn't make sense from a play caller's perspective or just a football perspective. So, you know, it was really, really interesting to see, you know, more data points for the Eagles, you know, as they evaluate Hurts and the offense as a whole. As we kind of talk about more of just the general offense, you know, I was really excited from what I saw from Miles Sanders. I still do not get what his usage is. It really just makes no sense at all. I mean, he had 9 carries last night for 56 yards. Some of the most explosive plays we had on the offense were running plays from Miles Sanders. I can think of 3 plays right off the top of my head that he gained 10-plus yards on carrying. And, you know, it's just those explosive plays that when you just refuse to give him the ball, you just don't get. You know, there's a play against Baltimore last year where he ripped a 70-yard runoff. There's a play against Pittsburgh last year where he ripped a 75-yard touchdown runoff. Like, this guy is a home run hitter, and he has a lot of ability. And when you only give him the ball 3-4 times a game, your odds are very, very reduced. And, you know, I mean, he only had 9 carries in this game, but still produced 56 yards and had a bunch of explosive plays to move the sticks. So he needs to get at least 15 carries a week. You know, 9's great and all, but 15 needs to be the minimum. And, you know, start from there and really, really exploit him. He was the only running back to get a carry in the game as well. Kenneth Gainwell wasn't really a big factor in this game, which was also interesting because, you know, the Eagles being down early and big so quick, you would have potentially assumed Kenneth Gainwell as the receiving back to be in a little bit, but he only had 1 catch for 1 yard and did not register a carry, so wasn't very involved in the offensive game plan this week, it appeared. But, like, you know, circling back to Miles Sanders, you know, this is one of the most explosive players in the locker room. So for him not to get at least 10 touches a game is it's just not right. So you know, that's one thing where I think we really need to exploit. You know, hopefully with a matchup against the Chargers coming up soon, I believe we go to the Vegas Raiders next week, but then we come home against the Chargers. You know, two defenses that you can run on, especially the Chargers. So, you know, I think that we have a little bit of a runway here to get going before the divisional games swing around, but it's going to be something that you very, very need to get in order before it's all said and done. As we kind of talk about the wide receivers here too, a couple interesting takeaways here, one good and one bad for me at least. The first being Devontae Smith's usage, like with Miles Sanders. It's just, it's criminal that this guy only gets 5-6 targets a game. You traded back right in the first round, but then you trade up to pass over the Giants to take Devontae Smith at number 10, who the Giants were going to take at 11, but you jump over from 12 to 10 and you take Devontae Smith and you refuse to give him the ball. In the games that he's had at least 9 targets, 10 targets, he's had productive games. In game 1, he had 90 yards and a touchdown, or 80 yards and a touchdown, whatever the case may be. And against the Chiefs, he had 10 targets, another 90 yards through there. We had another 9 targets, another, you know, a big yardage output. And, you know, when you only give him 4 or 5 targets in a game, it's just unbelievable. And I was talking about this with a few people. It's just, there needs to be at least 5 times a game where you just put everybody on the right side or everybody on the left side, and you put Devontae Smith one-on-one on the outside and just run a quick slant. 5 times a game. Doesn't matter if it's complete, doesn't matter if it's not, but the fact that they just don't do that, Devontae Smith is getting off the ball with ease, even in the physical NFL. So you need to run that play 5 times a game, because once you start running that and once you make that a staple of your offense, defense is going to start to adjust for that, and then it opens up a lot more plays on the field, double moves, you know, it's specific routes that you can counter off the slant. But Devontae Smith does such a good job getting off the ball that there's no reason he should see less than 8, 9, 10 targets in a week. There's just no reason, especially with the draft capital they spent. You see a guy, Kadarius Toney, who the Giants took at number 11. He's played about 2 weeks this year. He's played about 2 games this year, and last week he got hurt in the first quarter, or re-aggravated an injury. But, you know, he had 3 targets in the first quarter, or 4 targets in the first quarter, 3 catches. And you know, that's how you use your big your big investment players. You know, obviously the 10th overall pick is a huge investment in a player, and this guy's the Heisman Trophy winner from last year. He set records that, you know, people are probably breaking, you know, in the future, but he set a ton of records this last year. So you just need to get him involved in the offense, because it just, it makes no sense how you just continue to neglect your star players. But that is the negative that I was kind of insinuating on. But the positive here is Quez Watkins. He has been, you know, the darling of a lot of people in training camp, and has really, you know, taken the next step. In my opinion, and just from watching the games, he's definitely jumped Jalen Reagor on the depth chart, which, you know, I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, but, you know, I want Reagor to be good because we spent a first-round pick on him. But if Quez Watkins is outproducing him, he's outproducing him. And he's got the measurables, he's got the frame, he's got everything to be a great receiver. And he made a lot of really, really tough catches in the game. I mean, he only had 3 receptions for 44 yards, but one of those catches was a deflection that he ended up catching. Another was a great catch on the sideline where he dragged his toe. He had another target in the back of the end zone where he jumped over 2 guys, caught the ball, but was pushed out of the back of the end zone. So, you know, it's great to see that development, because, you know, if you can at least, if Rager's not going to be it, you need to at least have another guy on the outside you can rely upon. And, you know, he's still young, he's still raw. Obviously, there was a play on Hurst's interception. You know, he threw it up to Quez and trusted him, and Quez jumped a little bit early to try to play defensive back and swat the ball away. And, you know, jumped a little bit too early, and it was an interception. So there's still some things to clean up, but, you know, he has been a true, true surprise from the Eagles so far this year. And, you know, someone who, you know, absolutely is earning, you know, his playing time. And, you know, this isn't to take anything really truly away from Reagor, because he did almost have 90 yards of pass interference penalties, you know, 2 huge plays in the game. You know, one was a 50-yard bomb down the right sideline, and the other was a 40-yard bomb down the left sideline, and he was interfered with on both plays. So, you know, obviously if he makes one of those catches, it's a difference. If he makes 2 of those catches, it's a big game for Reagor. But that's just kind of, you know, that's the game you play if you're going to be a deep threat like that. So, you know, he was still involved. He still got the job done. You know, the 0 catches, 0 yards doesn't look great, but he was involved in the game and did some things well. However, it does appear to at least me that Quez has usurped him on the depth chart. So now we need to talk about Nick Sirianni here, because I was talking about it with some people and just, you know, thinking about it over the last couple of days. It just really seems, at least from an outsider's perspective, that he is stuck in his bubble, and he's stuck in his own box that he thinks is the right thing to do. And it's interesting, because week 1 he had such a good game plan, and it was so well ran. They looked fantastic. And ever since that game, it just seems like they just don't know what to do. There's been multiple stretches in the season. I'm talking 4, 5, 6 drives in a row. It happened multiple times this season where we just don't get anything going. Anything going. And it just doesn't make sense how you can go from being such a buttoned up team to all of a sudden just falling apart. And I know it's not on the players, because they're making plays out there, but, and that's where I was talking with Jalen Hurts. I mean, I think a lot of this is on the play caller. I mean, play calling, it's an important job in the NFL, especially. I mean, you saw the Bears have been struggling mightily this year, and Matt Nagy he gave up play calling to their offensive coordinator. Probably not willingly, but, you know, he saw that, and, you know, they've been playing a little bit better since then. But, you know, Nick Sirianni, first-time head coach, also a first-time play caller. So there's a lot of new going on with him. And maybe he needs a couple more years to iron the wrinkles out and everything. But, you know, you see a first-year head coach in Brandon Staley. I know he might not be calling the plays, but right away it just seems like he knows what he wants to do. He's going to stick to it. And I just said that with Sirianni. But at the same time, when something's not working, they're quick to switch it up. And side note on the Chargers, it'll be interesting to see how they respond to their loss against the Ravens, where they pretty much were embarrassed. So I'll be interested to see how they react to that. However, back to Sirianni, there's just a lot of questions that go on with Nick Sirianni. And, you know, maybe Hurts isn't the right quarterback for his system, or maybe the system is too rigid for Hurts, or I don't know what the deal is. But the fact that they can't adjust and give Miles Sanders carries, the fact that they can't utilize Devontae Smith and get him on one-on-one situations, It makes no sense. The best teams in the league, you know, the Chiefs, the Buccaneers, the, you know, it might not be fair, but, you know, the Bills, the all these teams that have these explosive wide receivers, they find ways to get them in situations to be successful. And it just seems like we just haven't done that. I mean, Miles Sanders and Devontae Smith are the two best players on the offense. And, you know, they just rarely get used. And they don't have a consistent role. So it's just, I just really don't understand that. I'm anxious to see the rest of the season and how it plays out. But, you know, you just look at it and it's just like, you know, what is going on? Because it doesn't seem like he knows what's going on. It seems like he's changing things all the time. Like that maybe not changing things all the time. I'm kind of contradicting myself there, but like he's doing, I feel like he's not making the obvious changes the teams need to make. And that's just, you know, at least what I've seen, especially in the Tampa Bay game, it just seemed like we tried to do the same exact thing over and over and we didn't get anything going. Luckily we got some pass interference penalties to keep some drives going. But if not, it just, you know, it wouldn't have looked good. It just wouldn't have been a good thing for the Eagles. So I'm really, really looking forward to next week's game against the Raiders to see if we change anything. Obviously, Miles got a little momentum going this week, so I'll be anxious to see if we start utilizing the run game more. And, you know, the one thing about the run game, and Brandon Staley, I keep going back to this coach of the Chargers, and you know, I think he's a fantastic coach. Everything I've heard, I'm going to reference actually another thing that he said once I start talking about the defense. But, you know, one thing he said is the offensive line, when you run the ball, is so much more engaged in the game, and the physicality of the game really takes a step up. And you saw this last night in the Pittsburgh and Seattle game. When Seattle decided, we're going to run the ball right down your throat until you stop it or change your defense, they took off. You know, they made it a close game. They tied the game. They went to overtime. You know, ended up losing, but still, you know, they got all the way down there, and it was because of the run game. And when you impose that physical aspect of the game, you know, you might pass it, and guys might not get hit 3-4 times in a row. And when you get the run game going, you get the offensive line engaged. You know, it's a lot easier to run block than to pass block. Offensive linemen will tell you that. I've heard that from, you know, multiple people, you know, watching some of the analysts talk about that specific thing. And when you have an offensive line that's struggling to protect Jalen Hurts, and you have an offensive line where you're shuffling faces around, you know, why not get the run game going and really make it a point of emphasis? You get the offensive line engaged, you get some confidence going in the offensive line as well, and then that sets up everything else. You can't just pass the ball with no threat of a run, because they'll drop 8 back in coverage, 7 back in coverage, and then it makes it impossible to throw. So that's why you really need to make it a point of emphasis, because it opens up everything else. Same thing I talked about with Devontae Smith. When you run that five times a game, you run a little slant route in, that sets up a lot more things, but you need to utilize your playmakers. Like, yeah, they might know it's coming. What you need to tell the defense is, stop it. Like, we're going to do this, but you need to stop it first before we'll stop running it. And I have yet to see that out of Nick Sirianni. And, you know, I hope it changes soon, because, you know, I think a lot of people are, I think the Eagles front office and, you know, a lot of people are already kind of looking at Nick Sirianni with a side eye. I'm going to give him at least the rest of the season, and, you know, we'll revisit this conversation next year. But, you know, I just think it's interesting so far. I'll leave it at that, and we'll see what happens in next week's game. And we'll kind of switch it over to the defense here, because this was an interesting portion of the game. You know, the run defense did not have much resistance early at all. Leonard Fournette was running all over the team. You know, when they got to the goal line, it was almost assumed that they were just going to punch it right in. And, you know, Javon Hargrave did get a little nicked up during the game. I'll have to check on his exact status after the game. However, you know, the run game definitely didn't get stymied, let's say, by the Eagles defense of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So that was one thing that they, you know, they just utilized. They utilized it all day, and, you know, it really made a difference for Tampa Bay when they decided to pass the ball, I should say. And, you know, kind of talking about more when we move back to the secondary a little bit, Darius Slay had another fantastic game. You know, held Mike Evans to about 2 catches for 20 yards, I believe. Mike Evans, 2 catches, 27 yards, and pretty much shattered Mike Evans all game, and he went off. Darius Slay had a great game, shut him down. So he's proven, you know, this season that a lot of the big games he gave up last year were, you know, more due to the fact that, you know, the NFL, it's tough to play cornerback in the NFL against these receivers, but also the fact that, you know, he is living up to that contract that the Eagles gave him after they acquired him via trade. And, you know, just to kind of, you know, I thought the defense as a whole, we'll talk about, you know, I thought the defense as a whole played a decent game. I mean, once they scored 28, you know, they kind of held him after that, which was nice. But 28 points is a lot of points to give up, especially with an offense that's struggling. But, you know, during the end of the game, they really held up. You know, they forced a lot of, they forced a lot of third downs. But, you know, the play that really defined it was Jarnard Avery taunting penalty right at the end of the game. A lot of people have talked about it, but, you know, it's just a tough play. You know, it was a big stop, first play of their drive. They only got 2 yards. You know, they hit him, got him out of bounds, stopped the clock. And he, like, got right up in him. So when Leonard got up, he was right there and he bumped him. And it's just, it's tough. And I'll go back to this Brandon Staley quote, the Chargers head coach. You know, it's tough to legislate such an emotional game. It was his key point. And it's so true, because football out of most other sports is, it's just so many emotions running because of the physicality and, you know, just the speed at which it's played. You know, obviously you're hitting people on every single play. It's a lot different than a lot of the other sports. And you know, it's, you know, players are going to show their emotion and everything, but it's just tough when, you know, when it happens in such a crucial moment. It just gets so much, you know, more examination. So it's just, you know, do I fault him for it? I can't say I wouldn't have done the same thing, but at the same time, this is a point of emphasis in the NFL. It's something that has been made prevalent. The Eagles have already succumbed to a couple penalties already this year, and, you know, it's just those types of plays that, you know, losing teams make. You know, those winning teams, you know, they're buttoned up. You know, they understand what's going on. They'll go to their teammates and celebrate over just standing over someone and flexing on them. It's like, come on, man, like, you know, that's an issue. But at the same time, you know, I can't say I would have done something different if I made a big tackle like that. So that's where it just gets tough. And, you know, do I blame him? No. But like I said, it's something you do got to be more cognizant of, especially at such a crucial point of the game. You know, that later that drive ended up, there was a 3rd and 7. And, you know, I was reading an article and they even mentioned how for the first time in the game, they switched it up to a dime package to have 6 defensive backs on the field. And, you know, they doubled Antonio Brown because they thought that that's exactly where Tom Brady was going to go. And they did. They rolled out right and they were going to Antonio Brown. They threw it and Marcus Epps was right there, swat the ball away. It's 4th down, punt. Eagles have a chance to go down and score it, but he just threads the needle right into AB right in front of Epps' face. And, you know, that's the game right there. They run out the clock and the Eagles cover. But it's just an interesting, you know, it was just an interesting dynamic there that I just did want to mention with Jarnard Avery and kind of that whole aspect of what happened at the end of the drive. But overall, you know, with the game, not a game I expected to win. So it was definitely tough there. But a game, you know, they showed fight in the end. You know, that's the thing with this team. They have shown fight in every single game this year. There hasn't been, outside of the Cowboys game, there hasn't really been a huge game where they've just gotten stomped on and, you know, went away with the tail in between their legs. A lot of times they fight and, you know, came back and made a lot of games interesting. So, you know, they've played the Chiefs and the Buccaneers, both very, very tough. And, you know, they have a couple more tough games, but then the schedule does lighten up toward the end of the season. So, you know, 2-4 right now. The Cowboys do look phenomenal at 5-1, so we'll see kind of how they finish out their season and what the Eagles end up doing with the rest of their schedule. But 2-4 is where the Eagles currently sit, tied with the football team for 2nd in the NFC East. All right, everyone, that's going to wrap it up. Just to put a bow on the show, please hit that subscribe button if you enjoyed what we talked about today. Also, if you enjoyed the podcast as a whole, please leave a 5-star review on the platform you're listening on. It would really mean a lot, and it would help the podcast reach new audiences. It only takes a couple seconds, so if you guys wouldn't mind dropping down that 5-star review real quick, like I said, it would mean a lot. If you want to follow us on social media, check the description below. I hope you all enjoyed, and I can't wait to see you back here again next time. I am your host, Noah Gillian, but hey, this is just one man's opinion.